morning is United States against Polanco and Gonzalez, 10-33-62 and 10-33-74.
May it please the court. My name is Amelia Bizarro. I'm counsel for Rafael Polanco. Gareth Morris represents Margarita Gonzalez, and I am here this morning to present argument on behalf of both appellants. The facts of this case are undisputed. At issue is whether the district court sentence was procedurally flawed because it failed to consider the appellant's 3553A arguments imposed above guideline sentences that heavily relied on obsolete guideline departures and failed to articulate, either orally or in writing, the court's reasons for its sentences, making appellate review impossible. The statement of reasons forms, which the court is statutorily required to complete in cases like this, in which the sentence varies from the guidelines, suggests that the court believed it was imposing a within-guideline sentence. Neither form signed by the court complied with the statutory requirement that it state with specificity the reasons why the sentence is outside the guideline range as required by Section 3553C2. The district court, of course, is not required to utter magic words in order for a sentence to be procedurally valid.
So let me start there, because this is a lengthy discussion at the sentencing hearing, and there comes a point at 264, after the acceptance of responsibility has been discussed, after other things have, where the court says at line 18, then I would like to proceed with arguments from counsel about the appropriate sentence, and then I will hear from each of the defendants as well. Well, it's hard for me to read that without thinking she's done the guidelines part of this. She's come up with the formal guidelines thing, and now she's opening it up, as the district judges are supposed to do, to the 3553A process. Now, I will grant you she doesn't say, comma, pursuant to 3553A, but this is an experienced district court judge, and the kinds of things that are now discussed, various factors, and actually Ms. Nasser at one point says, and before I get to the 3553 factors, we have all these policy statements in Chapter 5K that say to the district courts, you may impose a greater sentence for this reason, you may impose a greater sentence for that reason, and that's what she looks at. Why? How can that be wrong?
I think the problem is that the court's focus was on one factor of the crime, and that was the nature of the offense. It never looked to anything individualized about either Mr. Polanco or Ms. Gonzalez. And I think
the counsel didn't really highlight anything. You have Mr. Gutierrez basically saying there really isn't anything mitigating except for the low capacity of his client, and she thinks about that, and we get the fact that Ms. Gonzalez is a parent, which the court actually thinks cuts both ways, if not more adversely than favorably. I mean, these points get in there, and I'm first disturbed at the implication, your argument, that she's somehow making a mistake when she does, in fact, look at 5K2.3, 5K2.8, 2.1. I mean, she looks at quite a few of them and finds quite a few to be pertinent. How is that wrong? The worst that she does, it seems to me, is that in this sentencing form, in Part 3 for each person, she writes down the kind of revised offense level and range that she's notionally come up with rather than sticking with the one that she orally finds. And remember, the oral sentence prevails anyway. She orally finds the right one and then does the adjustments otherwise.
I think part of the problem is that the 3553A factor at issue here, I think on behalf of the appellants, is the need to protect the public. The appellants argued that they had no criminal history, that neither of them had ever been imprisoned, and this court's cases tell us that a sentence of imprisonment for someone who's never been in prison has a greater...
Counsel, those factors were entirely overwhelmed by the utter depravity of this crime, and that was clearly what was on the district judge's mind. And so they fall away as completely de minimis. And factors of those categories, or in that category, we have said repeatedly, can be passed over in silence by the district judge when they so obviously make no difference whatsoever.
I think the reason that we have the sentencing procedure is for cases just like this, when the crime is horrible and the injuries are extraordinary.
Right. And the judge is fully entitled, and the criminal justice system is fully entitled to put all the weight of Booker discretion on that factor in an appropriate case. And if there ever was an appropriate case for that, this is one.
But I think in this case as well, I mean, our jurisprudence tells us that the court must address the substantive argument. So while the argument in Your Honor's opinion may be weak, it's still substantive and it's still valid. And I think
it was so weak and inconsequential in the context of this crime and this pattern of obstruction of justice. I mean, the defendants here got a huge, enormous break in that the district court did not apply the attempted murder enhancement, for which there was ample support. And I don't understand why it was not applied here. This evidence would easily sustain an attempted murder conviction beyond a reasonable doubt in a state court prosecution. And there's no reason, in my judgment, reviewing this record, not to apply it. So they got an enormous break.
But that's like, I think, the government's argument, which was saying, well, listen, we could have applied this enhancement, but we didn't. But what the court found...
No, I think Judge Sykes is making a different argument, which is to put words in lots of people's mouths. Had the government taken a cross appeal from the decision not to have applied the attempted murder guideline, that cross appeal might have been successful. Now, the government didn't, in part, I'm sure, because by the time all was said and done, and the judge takes into account the nature of the crime, I would say the need to protect the public from these people. They go around committing arson, I mean, and hurting innocent people. I'm not sure that the need to protect factor is anything but another underscore that a serious sentence is needed. But if I were to speculate, you know, with a 300-month sentence, they figured, well, cross appeal is probably not worth it. I don't know.
No. But I think that the record is that the court found that there was no intention to harm, and that.
But you can infer intent from circumstantial evidence, right? And we have quite a bit of that, don't we?
We do have quite a bit of that. And again, the appellants don't.
I mean, it's a difficult position you're in, I realize, but it's still. And we realize that the process points that you're making are important, but the judge does follow a very careful process. She looks at factors that the guidelines tell her she may look at.
But it never applies them to 3553A. The court never makes the connection that it's required to make.
As expressly as you say, but I find it hard to read this without understanding that that's what she's doing.
Well, I think part of the problem, too, then, is the statement of reasons that the court is required to fill out. And while the oral judgment does trump the written one is required. And the court here makes it seem as though this is a within-guideline sentence when it very clearly is not. And then it doesn't explain a single reason in that form for the variance that it applied here.
She checked boxes. She checked the box saying she's departing from the guidelines range, and she checked a number of boxes indicating the reasons for the departure.
But that's all that she did. She didn't sort of explain the departure.
Right, but that, you know, does the trick when there's a thorough oral explanation, which there is here.
I guess we respectfully disagree.
Yeah, you're in a terrible position. I understand
right.
that. Perhaps this is not entirely fair.
And if I could please...
You may reserve a bit of time if you would
thank
like,
you.
And we'll hear from Ms. Nasser.
May it please the court.
Ms. Nasser, you tried to salvage this at the very end when you asked the judge, what about 3553A, or words to that effect. But that's the worst problem here, isn't it, that we don't see the judge closing the loop on this analysis.
Yes, Judge. I think the worst problem would be that that Judge Pallmeyer did not use the magic words, 3553, until prompted by the government. But as Your Honor pointed out, the district court is not required to use those magic words, 3553. The district court, throughout the entire record, and not just in her pronouncement of the sentence, did thoroughly address the factors under 3553 and properly stated her reasoning at the time of sentencing. She addressed factors beyond just the nature and circumstances of the offense. She addressed individual characteristics of the defendants, the deterrence.
Utterly without remorse, as I recall, was her assessment.
Yes, Judge. In addition, with regard to the statement of reasons, as Your Honors have pointed out, the rule is clearly in the circuit that if there's an inconsistency between the oral and the latter written sentence, including the judgment and conviction, that the sentence pronounced from the bench controls. And I'd also like to point out that in addition to that, the JNC itself is internally inconsistent because, for example, for Margarita Gonzalez, it says that in Part 3 that the advisory guideline range is 262 to 327 months. The sentence imposed is 300 months, which would be within guideline, but then the box is checked that it departs from the guideline. So the form itself is internally inconsistent, and it is merely a clerical error by the court clerk.
Well, it's worse than a clerical error. I mean, somehow Part 3 winds up getting filled out after she has made all of these notional adjustments. What I think she was doing was that she was trying to do what one of the earlier people today was saying. She was trying to structure her act of deciding how much more than the guideline sentence was necessary by looking at the policy statements of 5K and by, you know, instead of just looking at this whole crime and feeling disgusted by it, you know, she was trying to look more methodically at what was going on. And so she comes up with kind of a notional offense level that gives you this thing that she's put down in Part 3. That's not what should have been put down. I mean, that wasn't the purpose, or at least it would be a mistake if that's what you were doing. The guidelines don't change anymore if you read the way the policy statements are phrased.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that the district court was trying to be extra careful and extra exacting in considering 3553 in the context of the accepted departure provisions that are in the guidelines. The district court could have considered these exact same facts, the physical injury, the extreme conduct, without reference at all to the departure provisions. And the fact that she was doing so just evidenced the fact that she was attempting to ground her analysis and the guidelines, and it was not error to do so. It's clear from the transcript, the pages that Your Honor pointed out, which is Appendix 34 through 36, that she pronounced the guideline range, and then she asked for argument from counsel. That was repeated again at Appendix 59 by the defense counsel, Ms. Gonzalez's counsel, when he said, Your Honor, the guideline range is 30 with a criminal history category of 1 is 97 to 121 months. So it was repeated again by defense counsel. I know in the government argument we argued explicitly here are the reasons why an upward variance above that guideline range is appropriate. So it's clear from the transcript itself that that is what occurred here. Your Honor, the district court's lengthy explanation was more than adequate. And by any measure, these sentences were reasonable. For these reasons, the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the defendant's sentences.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Pizarro?
Section 3742 requires that when the sentence is outside the applicable guideline range, that the court provide a written statement of reasons. And I think without a doubt that wasn't done in this case, and that was error. But it's not just an inconsistency between what was said and what was written. An inconsistency might be that she said something but wrote something different. Here she never completed the form at all. So I think it's more than just an inconsistency. It's a failure to complete the duties required by the sentencing court. And, you know, certainly on direct appeal here, we are sort of stuck with this record and with the choices that counsel made, and particularly in Mr. Polenko's case, we're stuck. And I think that that's apparent from this record. But I don't think that we can get to reasonableness because of the procedural errors. And what you would have to do is sort of put the puzzle back together and take her statements and try to figure out what 3553A factors, and that's not permissible here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
We both were.
Both were. Well, we sincerely appreciate your assistance in this difficult case, and thanks to the government as well.
Thank you.